Dave Weston is going to talk to us about the cutting edge of browser security right now and what Edge is doing slightly different to your other browser that makes it interesting in terms of security. So without me trying to make things up, Dave Weston, please.
Hey, thank you very much. Welcome, everyone. All right. Glad to see everyone here. So I'm not going to necessarily talk to you guys about any cool web functionalities or APIs or any of the other numerous cool things that we've seen up here on stage today, but I am going to talk to you about something that I believe is equally important that really serves the underpinnings of the web, and that is browser security. So my name's Dave Weston. I'm on the enterprise security team in the Windows group at Microsoft. I lead a team of what are effectively hackers who proactively break all of the devices and products in the Windows group and then work with engineering teams to fix them. So a lot of experience in what can go wrong if you don't have the right design. And my compatriot, Matt Miller, from the Microsoft Security Response Center, he could not be here. He's back in Redmond working on the next set of features, but he'll be here in spirit with us. So I'm going to start this off by explaining a bit about what the modern web browser attack landscape looks like. Who is motivated to attack browsers? How capable are they? And how frequently do they achieve their goal? I probably don't need to tell this room, but the web is a big deal for those that don't know. If you're going to write an exploit, a web browser is a pretty good place to do it. It's going to give you access to billions of people. If it happens to be a zero day, those people may all be vulnerable because there's no patch for that specific vulnerability. So there's a lot of interest in building exploits from both the security researcher community and, unfortunately, the bad guy community. And again, web browsers are very complex pieces of software, right? Arguably as complex as operating systems at this point in time. So there's ample room to discover vulnerabilities, innovative exploit techniques, and other attack sort of approaches in a web browser. And that produces significant incentives for, like I said, both the sort of security researcher community who may have altruistic goals, but especially the attack community or the bad guy community who is looking to actually exploit users of a specific browser. And because of this increased interest, we've seen a spectacular set of headlines over the last 5 to 10 years. You know, attackers exploit zero day in Internet Explorer 8. You know, Microsoft rushes to fix attacks that are out in the wild. Or even, there's a Pwn, there's this hacking competition each year where people show their capabilities and their prowess at offensive security research against all of the modern day, modern versions of specific browsers. And that's led some people to really call this, the browser security space specifically, the internet battlefield, right? That's a quote there from Time Magazine just a year or so back. And what this means is that the people who are interested in attacking web browsers have gotten pretty good at it. So the first set of attackers that I've described to you are targeted attacks. These are sophisticated groups who are often well-funded and as technically savvy as probably anyone in this room who are interested in perhaps compromising a very specific group of people. That might be an activist community. It might be a specific enterprise who's got intellectual property that they're interested in, or even a government. We see that frequently. And that's achieved in a couple of ways. The most straightforward way is if you write a browser exploit, you can simply email it as a link, and most people are going to click it, right? That's what we call that a spear phishing attack. It's very targeted to a specific, a person. We want to do this very slow and avoid detection. That's sort of the attacker's MO. The other is arguably more scary and probably would pertain to anybody in this room, which is watering hole attacks. Just a few years back, a number of different high-profile development websites, forums, were actually compromised by a group, and there was a zero-day, latent zero-day that was exposed to the browser there. Why did they put a zero-day on a development group? Well, they know these developers work for large companies. They've got access to intellectual property and the source code that they're interested in. And so that's become frequently more common in the last few years. Here I'm showing you a graph of the number of zero days in Microsoft products specifically that we've seen. And you can see that huge spike in the last 4 to 5 years as more and more attackers and offensive groups have seen how valuable browser exploits can be to achieve reconnaissance or monitoring of specific groups. And that's also bled into large-scale what we call commodity attacks, and that's really cyber criminals. These guys are not necessarily as sophisticated as the left-hand group, the targeted attack groups, but they often take the artifacts that the R&D of these targeted attack groups and they monetize them. In fact, they build very nice software as a service platforms, right, where you can just get a URL, you pay your money, you log in, you don't have to be a sophisticated person, you place your attack out there through malvertising, websites, et cetera, you drive traffic, you look at your metrics just as any other sort of marketing or web marketing group would do, and you attack customers that way. There's another set of folks that were very interested in and were part and parcel of what we were thinking about in the design of Edge. And because of this interest, we've seen an increased effectiveness by people who are looking for vulnerabilities to attack, specifically Microsoft web browsers. Again, you can see a huge uptake in the last few years in the number of bugs that we've received in as reports. And again, across Microsoft browser, vulnerabilities specifically are more than 50% of the things that have been reported to us. And this is the kind of data that specifically went into designing Edge from the ground up to be the most secure browser Microsoft's ever produced. So let's look at one way of sort of measuring attack sophistication. That is what we believe is the complexity and the cost to develop a browser exploit. In the 2006-2007 era, Microsoft pioneered two really important technologies. Address-based layout randomization, that's where you sort of scramble where code and data is in memory so that attackers can't predict a specific address if they were to get something like a buffer overflow or other memory corruption exploit. We also pioneered what's called data execution prevention that prevented data spaces in memory from becoming executable, for example, the stack or the heap. That drove complexity for attackers and cost to develop a browser exploit up. But attackers did not rest on their laurels. Instead, they found very generic techniques that drove, again, the average cost of an exploit way down. And that's in the 2010 to 2012 era, that's what we call the ASLR attacks era, where, again, attackers had the cost complexity advantage. The era we're in now, and which we think Edge is the pinnacle of, is this arbitrary read-write era. And that's where an advanced technique where browsers essentially create a data view into memory where they can read and write anything they need to. We responded critically with two specific technologies. The first was our use-after-free mitigations, which I'm going to go into in detail. And the second was with our anti-return-oriented programming, or anti-ROP technology called CFG. That, in our opinion, threw a significant disruption into both the targeted attackers and those web-scale cyber criminals. But we did not rest on those laurels. Instead of getting in this tit-for-tat relationship, we've now, with Edge, in our opinion, developed what we think for the long term is an extremely disruptive technology, as well as a process for continuing to introduce new and innovative features that we think will keep attackers on their back heels, which will make Edge a not interesting target. And so the way that we did this was by starting with a single objective, which I think is intuitive to everyone in this room. We want users to be extremely safe when using Edge. The way that we believe that can be achieved is by simply looking at every opportunity to make it expensive and not desirable to attack the Edge browser. And we have a few tactics and principles that we use there. The first is, let's reduce as many vulnerabilities as possible. And we do that really in two ways. The first is, we have a significant investment in finding vulnerabilities in both automated and process-specific ways. And I'll talk to you again about that later in the presentation. The second way that we eliminate vulnerabilities is by analyzing classes. For example, things like use after freeze, string format vulnerabilities, stack corruptions. We build very generic mechanisms to prevent those, and we eliminate those bugs as a class, which we think is the most effective and scalable way to achieve vulnerability elimination. The next is that we have an extremely rigid taxonomy for classifying exploits that we do happen to see out in the wild or out attacking customers on customer networks through customer reports, et cetera. We look at the invariance in those, at the specific technique that might be used to bypass ASLR, et cetera, and we close the door on those by improving the platform. Next, if an attacker is somehow able to successfully get their code injected into the browser from the internet, we have a very strong isolation mechanism in Edge to contain the damage, to prevent that code from accessing any sensitive files, photos, intellectual property that's on a specific customer's machine. And finally, in the unlikely event that that is somehow bypassed, that isolation and code execution is running, we have very significant investments in blocking known malicious sites, which, again, I'll talk to you about. But in tandem, we think that this sets us up to have the most secure browser that Microsoft has ever shipped in Edge. So let's talk a little bit about what are these specific advances that we've made that we think are so helpful. The first is app container-based isolation. So the Edge process model was built from the ground up with this concept of isolation, right, containing any possible damage. And the way that works is the specific processes that accept untrusted data from the internet, so our content process, and new in the upcoming version, next version of Windows, our Flash content processes are effectively isolated in their own app containers. App container is a technology that was first introduced with our store apps, our universal apps, and it's a significant technological improvement over our previous browser sandboxing technology called Internet Explorer Protected Mode. We closed all of the known gaps in that space. And the end result there is that we have a much reduced attack surface. So even when someone does get code execution into a protected process, there's very few endpoints on the operating system that that untrusted code can actually talk to. They're prevented from reading any files on the system, writing any files on the system, or communicating with generally higher privileged processes. And specifically, moving Flash into its own app container, we believe will reduce the risk from one of the most common attack surfaces that we see out there. Next, and this might seem a bit strange at first, but I'm going to explain to you why this is one of the most effective security mitigations, is Edge is run 64-bit by default. Now, why is that interesting from a security perspective? Well, a fundamental technique in exploiting browsers is knowing what APIs and what code to call. And so address-based randomization mitigates that by randomizing that, so the attacker doesn't know in memory where any specific piece of code is. Now, as a counter to that, attackers begin to simply fill up address space and exhaust all of the possibilities. And on 32-bit, that's very possible, right? Filling up effectively 2 gigabytes of address space is quite simple. And then they no longer have to know a specific address. They can just transfer to any address in the event of a memory corruption, buffer overflows, stack-based overflows. Their code is more than likely going to be there. And so that was a very, very common technique that we saw in the majority of exploits up into the development of Edge. We've countered that in Edge by moving to a 64-bit address space model, where that's no longer feasible, right? You'd be sitting at a machine for a long time trying to build a piece of JavaScript that would exhaust all of memory in a 64-bit process, and we've effectively nullified the ability to use heap spraying in any specific exploit that was attempted to be developed for Edge. So we think that's a huge advantage. Moving on. We, as I said, we have a very specific taxonomy for looking at the vulnerabilities and exploits that are reported to us. And something that we saw that was a shocking increase is in the last few years, the vast majority of vulnerabilities are what are called use after free. Now, what is a use after free vulnerability? Well, it's quite simple. Browsers are, again, very complex processes that are exposed to the internet, and JavaScript is run untrusted in those. So attackers who write very clever JavaScript, perhaps using threads or other extensible features, have a lot of control over the state of the process. And so what we found is that attackers were building automated tools to discover concurrency issues that would lead to so-called use after freeze. So use after freeze occur when a underlying native object is deleted, but an existing stale JavaScript reference still exists. And that gives the attacker the opportunity to allocate additional data under that previously freed object and then make a call through in JavaScript, thus gaining control of execution in the process. We've mitigated that as a class by introducing garbage collection in Edge. This is really a first for the browser space. All of our DOM objects are garbage collected, which means even if the attacker was able to try to attempt to trigger a use after free, garbage collection would kick in, recognize that a reference still exists, and no longer allocate memory in that sort of vacant space. And so the end result is that use after free mitigations as a class are essentially extinct in Edge, which is a huge, huge win for security. Now, moving on. Another advantage of Edge, and specifically being standards-based, is that we were able to cut out a significant chunk of code. Remember when I went back to the first slide, right? What is one of the principles that's making attack surface or attack in browsers interesting? Well, one of those is there's so much opportunity to find vulnerabilities in new features. By reducing some of the old code, some of the legacy code that hasn't been built necessarily with security at the forefront, we were able to reduce a huge chunk of the attack surface that's traditionally been a bug haven. And so simply by removing code, we've stripped down the browser significantly and given attackers much, much, much less opportunity to find that zero-day vulnerability and exploit it. Now, one of what I think is an extremely innovative feature is code integrity in Edge. Now, what do I mean by code integrity? In the Edge content process, you can no longer load a DLL, say, from the internet into the content process without it being signed specifically by Microsoft. That means that an attacker, in the unlikely event they're able to get code execution in the content process, they can't simply make a call back to the internet, download a DLL, load library in memory, and be off to the races with their piece of malware or whatever their payload is of their choosing. It has to now be signed by Microsoft. Again, this is something that's really leading in the browser space. A side effect, and another positive increase there, is that malware that may already be running on the machine or grayware, things like ad injectors who want to tamper with the Edge process, say, injecting ads where they shouldn't be and ruining the user experience, or injecting fake DOM forms to intercept passwords, they also can no longer inject DLLs because code integrity will verify that Microsoft actually assigned that binary and it's true and legitimate. Again, huge increase for both the malware and exploit spaces. And again, another advantage of Edge that's been built in with a lot of thoughtfulness. Okay, the next thing I wanted to talk about was how we mitigate return-oriented programming, which is, again, a fundamental technique that you saw on that complexity of attack slide. Now, return-oriented programming is a pretty interesting and a new technique that's, that attackers have used generically across most of their exploits. And what return-oriented programming does is an attacker finds, say, vulnerability use after free or a corruption. They want to override a function pointer or somehow hijack the normal control flow or the normal flow of execution in Edge or another browser. Normally, they need, because they can no longer allocate new executable memory, they need to redirect to some sort of executable instruction that's already in the process. That technique, in general, is called return-oriented programming. That's where attacker overwrites a function pointer and directs it at an existing piece of code in memory that's advantageous to them, creates a process, creates a file, et cetera. Microsoft now, in Edge, it ensures that all binaries are compiled with a technology control flow guard. And what control flow guard does is, at compile time, it creates instrumentation points for all legitimate control transfers. So it understands every time there's a call through a virtual function pointer that's legitimate, it needs to track that. Then at runtime, the operating system looks at that table, and anytime a control flow is attempted, or control flow change is attempted, the operating system ensures that it was one of the known legitimate control flow transfers, and if it isn't, simply terminates the process. And so attackers can no longer simply override a function pointer or some other control structure, redirect it to an arbitrary set of instructions through ROP, because the operating system will determine at compile time that was not legitimate or known and enforce it at runtime, thus simply eliminating a very common mechanism for writing and weaponizing exploits. We believe that's an extremely disruptive technology. So moving on, another observation we've made by looking at what's happening in the real world is that kernel attacks are on the rise. Now, why would kernel attacks be on the rise? Well, when you start to sandbox all of your processes and attacker's code is constrained there where they can't do anything interesting, they've got to find a way to get around that. And a very common way to get around that is to look at the operating system kernel, which has tons of attack surface, maybe latent vulnerabilities, and escape that way. If you're able to, from a web browser, compromise the kernel, you now have run of the system and can do anything you like. And so we've seen kernel exploits, specifically in the browser space, growing since about 2014. Now, the way that we've sought to disrupt that is by simply looking at what Edge needs to do in terms of communicating with the kernel. And so we instrumented Edge and looked at all of the actual legitimate kernel calls. And we built an allow list that restricts Edge to only talk to what it absolutely needs to. eliminating about two-thirds of the kernel attack surface that was previously exposed to Edge. That means that attackers who maybe find a random vulnerability in the kernel can no longer wrap it into an Edge exploit, you know, execute that, and now have system privileges. That attack surface or that kernel call is simply no longer allowed. Not only are we doing this in the next version of Windows for the Edge content process, but it's also being applied to the Flash process. And what that enables us to do is ensure that exploits that are coming in Flash that would seek to escape the sandbox by exploiting a kernel vulnerability no longer have that opportunity, or that opportunity is significantly reduced. And we've seen in our own internal testing and analysis of in-the-wild exploits that this policy is mitigating a number of exploits that we see coming in. So that's particularly interesting. I spoke to you previously about one of our strategies, right? One of our strategies is if you're able to navigate this gamut of very sophisticated exploit mitigations that we've built into Edge, we still want to stop you by blocking known sites that may be distributing pages that contain exploits. So that might be a malicious advertisement, could be a blog or a website that wasn't patched, that was compromised, and code is now being hosted there with or without the owner's knowledge. And the technology we use for doing that is Smart Screen. So something we introduced in Windows 10 was the ability for Smart Screen to enumerate exploits across the internet and have Edge maintain a list of those known exploited websites and simply block them when users get there. That was a nice companion to a capability we already had, which was stopping social engineering websites. Now, what do I mean by social engineering? That's something like a scammer site where you're being asked to type in your credentials. It might be a fake, a fake antivirus client. It could be a fake update, et cetera. We've had that capability for a long time, but we improved that by building in a synchronous blocking capability for exploits. And then finally, we have the capability to block phishing sites as well. Now, how do we build this corpus of millions and millions of hacked websites? Well, Microsoft has a substantial investment in its cloud. And so we have an anti-malware client that's got about 300 million installations worldwide, and some of those URLs are being reported to us, you know, by the minute from that cloud. In addition, we have Bing, which has an automated crawler that's every time the web is indexed, and that index is built, we're scanning sites for malicious content, and that's fed back into Edge. And then, of course, Hotmail and Skype and many of our other properties, there's many spam content that's sent out that might contain malicious URLs. All of that is built into a corpus that we use for blocking. And on top of that, we're able to use machine learning and other data science practices, statistical modeling, to find infrastructure that attackers are using and simply block that entire infrastructure. That gives us a proactive capability where we're not necessarily always just waiting for a website to be reported to us. Instead, an attacker may have a single URL that's determined as bad, and we're able to, through machine learning and statistical analysis, build out the entire infrastructure and block it in one fell swoop, which is, again, extremely disruptive. Now, all of those features are amazing and give us a lot of security capability, but we still need to ensure that there aren't vulnerabilities there to begin with. And we have a very integrated process at Microsoft and specifically in Edge for doing this. The first is that we have an extremely scalable automated capability for doing static analysis on the code that's checked in by the Edge developers. That static analysis looks for very common, you know, flaw types, things like uninitialized variables, integer overflows, buffer overflows, et cetera. On top of that, we have a cloud-based automated testing infrastructure that performs a style of security testing called fuzzing. And that is where we might do things like generate random but slightly valid JavaScript programs looking for parser issues, looking for state issues, et cetera. We do that in the Microsoft Cloud, and in fact, Edge had 320 machine years of automated testing prior to shipping, where we found hundreds and hundreds of bugs that were fixed before it got to you. So we use that to great effect, and static analysis catches and is a nice complement there to fuzzing as well. In addition to that, we employ human experts who review all of the critical spaces inside of Edge. So during Edge's development, we performed over 70 security reviews that resulted in dozens of fixed design bugs, again, before each iteration of Edge is ever released, ensuring that we've got that covered and that there isn't any latent design issues or specific you know, implementation issues. On top of that, I think I sort of established that we learn a lot by through our telemetry systems and by understanding how attackers actually attack Edge so that we can disrupt them. We've started to learn that we should do that proactively through our red team efforts. And so we have a group of guys, many are on my team, who actually go out and proactively research new exploit techniques and build them against internal products, including Edge. We then take the findings from that, which is often really close to the attack simulations we might see in the wild, and we build new features or identify gaps that we can address based on that. So red teaming is a new capability that we've used to significant effect, and it's helped us to proactively build a few mitigations that we think over the long term give us a tactical advantage over attackers. Now, what does this all add up to? I've talked to you about a lot of features and a lot of investment and resources that we have applied, but what are the real results? So let's look at measuring the impact of these improvements. Since we've shipped Edge, which is well over 12 months ago, or roughly about 12 months ago now, we've had no known 0 days or exploits in the wild. That is a huge, huge, huge statement, and it's not something we've ever had previously with a Microsoft browser. So that is kudos to the Edge team and the security folks who've worked with them. We've also had a 75% reduction in the incoming vulnerabilities that apply to Edge. Again, a huge watermark and what we think is reaffirmation that our security strategy is working. And we continue to monitor in this space, but as of now, we think that this is a really good evidence that we're on the right track and that the investments we're making will have a long-term security effect. So to close things out, Edge was built from the ground up, from our learnings from previous browsers and through telemetry, to be the most secure browser we've ever produced and to mitigate current and future exploit techniques. Each iteration of Edge, using it as a service, we take the opportunity to basically catch attackers off guard and ship new proactive mitigations that will drive their costs up unexpectedly, thus really disrupting that ecosystem. And the end result has been that we have yet to see a 0 day in the wild that applies to Edge, and we think that that's evidence that we're on the right track with respect to security. That's all I have, unless.
Okay, as a reminder, questions are later on, and I'm quite sure there aren't any open questions because that was all very concise and simple. So if there's any of you, there will be a test later on before you get food, so I hope you all listened very well about this.